Okay, Jen, take us away. Take us to Sky High.
I'm not about to spoil. Fire up that bus, Sadie, and drive us on up to that little floating island. Hello, everyone. And welcome to You Should See the Other Guy, the podcast where we watch a movie featuring romantic elements of some sort and tell you why whoever picked a love interest chose poorly and should have hooked up with one of the other characters. I am Jennifer.
I am Samantha.
I am Sadie Stronghold.
Sadie Stronghold is such a good name.
We are going to be talking about Sky High, which is I consider it one of the greatest films ever made. I was talking with Elliot, my roommate, while I was watching this, and he was like, if the CGI were 15% better, this would be the greatest movie that has ever been created. And I'm like, yeah,
did
you're
this
right.
Go straight to video or to TV? Like,
no
how
way.
Did
I saw this in theaters.
Memory hole this? You saw it in theaters, Jen? You haven't
sure
seen
did.
Alien, and you've seen Sky
and you
High
were just giving
theaters.
Me some shit, Samantha, about the gaps in my filmic viewing history. Well, I have seen Sky High the way it was intended to be viewed.
An IMAX large
in the
format.
Theater with a ticket that cost like $7. Yes.
In 2005.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is a great movie. Okay, so brief summary for those who don't. I mean, honestly, you really can get a lot from it, from the title, truly. But anyway, it's about these teenagers who are the children of superheroes or villains. And the main character, his name is Will Stronghold. And his parents are basically Superman and Wonder Woman. And his best friend is like a vegan who can grow plants. And her name is Layla, played by Danielle Panabaker, which I don't know where she's at. But I like seeing her was like a blast from the past. And a few other wacky characters. And they go to high school in the sky. Sky High. And the system of like, it's like the hierarchical system that has been created seems like it was designed to create villains. Like, I don't like, because there's on the first day of school, what you do is you are tested. And what? What? Listen, are you going to talk about the plot in a negative way?
No, it's just like, I actually really admire the plot architecture of the film because it's at once so like so basic, but it's basic in that way of like it knows the fundamentals here. But yeah, if you stop back and think about it too long, you're like, hey, this seems like fomenting discord too. Separate the students into greater and lesser camps.
As Sadie points out, then that provides job security for the future heroes as those who were shunted off into the sidekick class become villains.
Yeah,
damn.
If Christopher Nolan made this, like, we would zoom back and realize that, yeah, the superhero industrial complex was...
Yeah, this is like a cynical world these kids live in. Okay.
Anyway, we're already derailing Sadie's summary.
If you want large-handed superhero commentary that doesn't constantly swing its dick around, turn off The Boys and turn on Sky High is all I have to say. But anyway... so you are tested on your first day of school, and if your powers are like cool enough, then you are deemed a superhero. And then if your powers like suck, then like there's cousin Greg from Succession is in this movie, and he's basically like a human glow stick. So he's obviously.
Oh my god, that's cousin Greg! I wondered why
cousin
I liked
Greg.
Him so much this time around. I would
His
also like to insert at this point
impeccable.
The summary. That your powers are sorted into whether they are awesome or they suck. It is Bruce Campbell wearing a pair of thigh revealing shorts and knee high socks who does the choosing, just to set the stage for anybody who hasn't seen the movie.
Coach Boom. And let's see, Mary Elizabeth Winstead plays spoilers, she's a student there who becomes a love interest to Will's character, but then turns out she's a villain who's actually his parents' age. So wild. And then the only other character that I think is kind of worth mentioning is War and Peace, who is the son of a superhero and a villain. And so he has, like, basically, again, it's literally, they're just like macro aggressions against him his entire life. And so he is kind of supposed to become a villain, and he kind of starts out as Will's enemy and then becomes his friend at the end. So it's a very complicated thing. And then also Layla, Daniel Panabaker's vegetarian character, she is in love with Will, but Will is only has eyes for Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who is orphaning her way into his heart. And yeah, at the end, everyone is briefly turned into babies. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is captured, and everything ends up okay. Will ends up with Daniel Panabaker's character, and War and Peace ends up his best friend. And everyone's a superhero, and it's all cool. The end of my summary. There's a lot more into it, but like, we can,
their worth
we can
is proven because the sidekick saved the day, because nobody planned for, you know.
And like most of the superheroes turned out to be villains.
Tie up all the superheroes.
Magically, all the sidekick powers turn out to be exactly the right like skill set they need to stop Mary Elizabeth Winstead from babifying everybody.
Oh, yeah. She explicitly also says she was babyfying everybody so that she could re-raise them to become supervillains and have like a whole army of supervillains. So she was trying to upset the delicate balance of this school's production of heroes, sidekicks, and villains and turn it all villain. But she was foiled.
I feel like you could find a less ostentatious way to educate superheroes than putting a high school in the sky and busing them there every day.
I can share.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, I understand in concept that like they would like to keep the students away from the general human populace while they learn how to use their powers. But also the anti-gravity system does not work that well, as we see in the last like 15 minutes of the film.
That becomes and a so major like, liability.
Yeah. Like, I just feel like it would make more sense to just put them like in a desert somewhere for a little while. Well, I guess that also would drive them insane. You know, I don't know if there's a clear answer.
But frankly,
I'm not the
principal.
You know,
to argue from the other side here, that actually kind of lends to the realism of the movie. Because, I mean, think back to your experiences in high school.
It being in the sky?
Did anything make sense? Was anything well done? If there was an opportunity for school administration to make a decision, did they ever not pick the absolute most absurd and worst possible option that was going to cause major inconvenience for everyone and not benefit the students in any way? That's how they do.
Make some good points.
Yeah. I can see it.
So, Sadie, I had never heard of this before. I don't know how, with like the everyone who was in it, I had never registered this. I guess in 2005. I don't know. I have some weird cultural gaps in the '80s.
You didn't have time to go see Sky High?
No, I had never heard of Sky High. And when I started watching it, I was a little worried that it was going to be like Harry Potter for superheroes. You know, like one of the things I find most annoying about the Harry Potter movies is like, the kids all get to the high school, and then, like, even though they're literally wizards, they're like, whoa, there are owls flying in the cafeteria. Whoa. Like, the whole movie is just, like, reaction shots of groups of kids being, like, astonished by things.
Yeah.
And Sky High, like, started to go down that route with the introduction to the school, but then it just, like, gave way to, like, a nice little tidy love triangle and evil plot scheme with some light, you know, sidekick superhero divide commentary that was just playful and on the nose and fourth wall breaking enough. And I generally enjoyed myself.
So I think this movie is absolutely fascinating as a cultural artifact. And I liked it. Sadie, I just want to say up front, I am pro Sky High. I am team Sky High along with you. I don't remember why I saw it in theaters at the time, why that was one of the movies I have seen in theaters in over the course of my life. But I do remember being pleasantly surprised and enjoying it. I was a huge War and Peace fan at the time. I would have been 19 at the time this movie was airing in theaters. And it's funny to watch it now as a 36-year-old because seeing it originally, obviously, I was basically the age of these characters. But at age 19, you know, you think, or at least I thought, that I was so fucking grown up and an adult now and far above, you know, these kids in their little high school drama-rama. I don't know. Anyway, so it was fun watching it like from the age, you know, closer to the parents and seeing what happened. But anyway, to the reason that I find this so interesting is because this is a superhero movie from the pre-Marvel world. This happened before Iron Man. And like Samantha said, yeah, I was afraid, you know, that it was going to be a little bit too much of a superheroes, like in the Wizard Boy franchise that shall not be named, you know, but it's not. It's a nice, tidy little movie. They kind of, and I am surprised though, that it seems very well set up for sequels that they never did, but I respect it further that it just stands on its own.
Yeah, you're so right about that. Like I think about what superhero movies could have been at the jump of Sky High and then where we've ended up now. And it is just kind of disheartening because I feel like this was such a fun movie. And well, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, she's kept it on lock because she was also in Birds of Prey, which is a great superhero
movie. Oh my God. Sadie, it looks like so has the Layla chick. When you said you wondered what happened to her, I looked up her IMDb and apparently she plays Caitlin Snow / Killer Frost across a ton of DC properties. In The Flash TV show, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl, Arrow. So she kept living the superhero life or supervillain.
I'm not sure what Arrowverse. Killer Frost is. Damn. See, they're keeping it on lock. And also, like, I feel like everyone in this movie has gone on to be in like fun, cool things. You know, like most recently, Will's actor, Michael Angarano, he was in Minx on HBO Max and he was really good.
And he went on IRL to smoke weed with Kristen Stewart right after she got announced that she was playing Bella Swan in the Twilight franchise. And then he went on to have a baby with Maya Erskine. So clearly this guy knows how to live life in real life, even though he's a jock douchebag sort of in this movie.
And that Lydia Carter woman went on to have a cameo in Wonder Woman 1984. You know, that's probably a huge get for her career.
That was amazing. Linda Carter is their principal in this. Although it was tonally a little strange because she seems so just and wise and good that why in the world is she presiding over this strange school where Bruce Campbell is bullying children, you know? But loved Linda Carter in there. That was great.
Let's see. I feel like what I wanted to talk about most specifically is that this Sky High overlapped. So, of course, I was like obsessed with Sky High when I was younger. Like I had this on VHS. I watched it constantly. And it overlapped with my obsession with Avatar The Last Airbender. And I don't know what it was about the early 2000s and like hot teenage person that like middle school girls just clamored all over who had a red and black color scheme.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like did
some awesome Hot
things.
Topic accessories on there. That leather jacket that War and Peace wore, I was not immune.
Yes.
Based on the strength of Sky High and the clips of that guy chasing after a skateboarding dog in a towel from that Ashley Simpson pop star movie that followed that I never watched, I had an enormous crush on Stephen Strait in the mid-aughties.
Can what can we talk about the name? Why would you name your character War and Peace? Is it like, it's got to be an intentional reference.
Oh, for sure. Because he has one superhero parent and one villain mm-hmm. parent. And they are like, so it's like, you got the war, you've got the peace, you've got the battle between them, and the streak of Manic Panic, Pillar Box Red at the front of the hair.
Yeah. Yeah. He should be riding a dirt bike.
That
color scheme.
This movie would have been even more perfect if instead of having to ride the bus or however the upperclassmen get there, if War and Peace had arrived to the school each morning on a flying dirt bike with like fire Sky blasting motorcycle. Out the back. Oh my God.
I'm torn between thinking the illusion is brilliantly on the nose and annoyingly on the nose. Yeah. War and Peace. Oh my God.
Hang on. I've got to go get Lily. BRB.
Ah. Little baby squirrels.
Well, my young adult crush definitely was Mary Elizabeth Winstead, so I'm easily persuaded to the other guy in this one, even if she is a, well, I guess I'm persuaded when I think that she's a fellow teenager at the school, and then when I find out that she is like a gazillion years old, I'm like, okay, this movie just like raised some very icky, like,
I know,
ethical questions here. Not really questions, more just like, yeah, something that was straight up wrong.
I watched this movie a lot when I was like young, and then obviously around like middle of high school, I just kind of fell off of it, and I revisited it in college, and I was like, I did not realize how batshit this plot line is, where she's like 40 and she was making out with him 40 to 50
years old. Yeah, that's like the most super villainish action that happens in the movie.
Yes. But honestly,
like,
I think
she just left that underage boy alone.
I love it. It's like, it certainly does have a shock factor. I'll say that.
They don't even make him like 18 or whatever. He's like a freshman, right? And it's like, oh man. Like, yeah. So like I was pretty sure she was the villain, you know, like the villain's voice was disguised for much of it. I was pretty sure she was the villain. And for the first, you know, 95% of the movie, I was like, I'm going to come on the podcast and be like, he should have been with Mary Elizabeth Winstead and joined in her evil scheme. And then surprise at the end, the movie was like, they have a 50-year age gap. And I was like, oh, holy shit.
This is kind of, there are some iffy around that same era, you know, the whole age gap with going back to old Bella and Edward in Twilight. But they got around that by being like, he's forever 17, even though he's really like 100 and something. And with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, it's sort of like, she's re-17, even though she's actually like 45. I don't know.
Oh, and
she did say canonically she had to go through puberty twice. So I guess it was like, what's the ethics on that? Like, if you're repubified, like,
but like mentally, she's still, you know,
mentally
like a middle-aged
already.
Woman.
Already, even before middle-aged woman, like talking earlier about how when I was 19, I felt so much older than these characters. Like, can you imagine being a senior in high school and wanting to make out with a freshman when there are like only 3 years difference between you? No, disgusting. Yeah. That's like my little brother's basement friends, you know, when I was a senior in high school. Absolutely not.
Could they not have made her mom like her the daughter of someone who was trying to perpetrate the scheme? I don't know.
I still think that it's great. I think it's like a I think it's a fun plot point. Like, obviously it's like weird, but like, that's kind of like, that's part of it. Like, I think that it, there's so much of like the generational shit that they're already like not forcing on us, but like really hyper focused on. Like, War and Peace is juggling with the lineage of his father. And then Will is also dealing with his parents, and like, all, it's like a lot of parent focused stuff. So I feel like if it had also been like, I'm carrying out my parents' legacy, then it would have been like, oh my God, like, you do not have that much skin in the game. But like, if it was actually her, I could see how she would be twice as crazy.
Lily, yeah, don't do that.
The movie does have some strong boomer millennial movie here, in terms of like, back in my day, there weren't any participation trophies. We just, we were heroes and sidekicks, and that was the way it was. And we always stuffed the sidekicks in the lockers, and they just took it because they knew their place. Like, it contrasted with the new generation, but it's not like, it's, that part of it isn't too heavy handed. It's more just like having a little bit of fun at Kurt Russell's expense.
Kurt Russell is wonderful in this movie. I laughed so hard at the part where they go down to the secret lair because Michael Angarano got in trouble, and anyway, so he's supposed to go have like a father-son talk with him away from the movie. And of course, he's like the football hero dad who's like secretly proud of his son for getting into and winning a fight and his powers emerging, even though so anyway, he takes him down to like lecture him. And then he's just like this, you know, douchebag middle-aged dad, like clapping him on the shoulder and stuff. But then when he says like, oh, and tell your mom I took away your Xbox. And he's like, I don't even have an Xbox. The face he makes when he's like, are you sure about that? And like flips around that chair. You can tell that those two actors just like genuinely fucking lost it laughing in real life. And it took me out. Like, yeah. One of the top five funniest moments of the movie. And that's all on Kurt Russell, because that was a stupid joke.
And speaking of Kurt Russell's character, can we talk about how Kurt Russell's character, his wife, and then Dave Foley's character, his Kurt Russell's old sidekick, were definitely in like a weird throuple situation, and then the sidekick got left behind.
That's why Kurt Russell's still pretending he can't remember his name to this day. Oh, he had to memory hole him because of what happened with Kelly Preston.
Kelly Preston is her name. Yeah, I was gonna say, like, the movie, like, she displays, like, the outfits they put her in are very cleavage forward throughout the entire movie.
Her,
I don't know if anyone
else
noticed that.
Is boobs. You couldn't help but notice it. That's all you can look at when she is on screen.
I was this just like the era for it, that it was like, well, here's a movie for children. The mom is gonna just be like tits out the entire time, of course. Or was this like a choice? I could not tell.
Well, it was 2005. So I think that in that era, in order to have a middle-aged woman in your movie at all, you had to justify it by like showing how conventionally physically attractive she was. That's my little thoughts on that. Because they never, I don't know, but yeah, it's like to the point where you think it's going to be like, it's going to come into the plot, her having giant titties, like they're so prominent, but no, it's just her personal style.
Yeah, Chekhov's titties. You see them in act one.
Yeah. Maybe it's like she has the power of flight.
She has to nurse all the babified.
She got babified. Oh my gosh. Too.
No, her power is flight. So I think that they must inflate, like if she falls out of the sky, like it's like a landing pad to protect her.
Yeah, that's our one critique, that Kelly Preston's boobs could have served a plot purpose.
Other than that, perfect movie.
It makes me sad that you're right that like you just needed to look super hot if you were like over 40. Speaking of
Linda
older
Carter
people
only got
in this
to
movie.
Wear a blazer because she was literally Wonder Woman. That's otherwise they would have had her back in a corset too.
Did you know Jim Rash, the dean from Community and currently an Oscar winner, plays Mary Elizabeth Winstead's minion?
Wow. His vocal stylings he chose for this movie.
This is odd, one of the most like star-studded casts in like the weirdest way. And
yeah.
I love it.
I rewatched the original Wet Hot American Summer recently at like a local theater that plays old movies. And like Sky High is similar to that movie in having like people in the cast who go on to do like big things where you're like, hey, there's Cousin Greg, there's the dean, there's, you know, Death Proof girl. Like, it's just, it's the root, the source.
The source.
So if Wet Hot American Summer was the Gen X source of like half of Hollywood, Sky High is the millennial version of that.
Well, what has the Will person gone on to do?
Well, he has a baby with Maya Erskine. We know that.
Oh, and that's why we're doing this, right? Yeah. This was from Plus One. Okay.
Yes. This is our Plus One follow-up episode for a reason, because Sadie is a genius.
He has been in a ton of stuff. Most recently, he's going to be in Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan's
Who
upcoming.
Isn't going to be in Oppenheimer, though? At least of, true. Like, white Hollywood actors.
And also, he's been in a lot of stuff. He was also in Penis, his wife's magnum opus.
That's what you got it. When you say it out loud, it's Pen 15, Sadie, because the whole trick of it was to get somebody to write Pen 15 and then be like, oh, you wrote penis. You know,
I will do no such thing. I will be calling it what it is. Penis. And he was also in one of my favorite movies that I haven't seen in a long time. So I guess it's not in my top five, but like, I really loved this the times that I've seen it is The Brass Teapot, which is like a dark comedy rom-com with him and Juno Temple from Ted Lasso. And they met on the set of that and they dated for several years. But that's also a great movie. So I feel like he's been in a wide, and he also was in Minx as kind of the like shithead boyfriend who was kind of good, but also bad. Minx is a great show,
Speaking
by
of,
the way.
That's another thing that I need survives. To binge before HBO Max kills it.
Damn. Yeah, God. But what was I going to say? The one thing that always bothers me with Sky High, with Will's character, is I always think that it would be so cool if he did develop powers, but they were entirely different from his parents, because he ends up just getting his mom's flight and his dad's strength, which is like, that's fine. But like, that's not really a surprise. Like, it's just like, he gets his powers and then it's like, we're done with it. You know what I mean? And like, I just wish that he would have gotten something that was like fun.
Yeah. What perhaps? If he had an actual sidekick power, like being able to turn into a puddle of goo or transform into a guinea pig, you know, and had to save the day
or
using
like,
that.
Just like an entirely different, like interesting power that was really like uniquely him. Cause it just feels like, okay, he just got what his parents can do. Like, cool, whatever. And I really think that that Royal Pain, Mary Elizabeth Winstead's like arc is interesting, like her power specifically, because her power is like tech manipulation.
She's a technomancer.
Yeah. So it's, when you tech kinetic. I don't know what it is.
Telekinetic?
But it's something related. What?
No, wait.
No, like to do with technology.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But she mentions that like she was not like her powers, they didn't understand her powers the first time around because it was like in the 80s or whatever. And so she was just relegated as a sidekick. And then that's when she went insane and became a supervillain.
You imagine like all she could do in the 80s was like rewind a cassette tape.
Yeah.
She could like fix the TV remote with her mind. But yeah, she has a much more useful power in the world of the 2000s than she did previously.
But I think that's really interesting. interesting.
If Sky High had caught on, I feel like we could have avoided, you know, Harry Potter. We could have avoided like a young adult oriented franchise whose entire point was like, your fate in life is predetermined and here is your grouping and never shall you deviate from it. And yeah, just accept your social place. God. Some of you are going to be the heroes and some of you are just going to be weird and that's it.
When you look at that entire arc in hindsight, it's no wonder J.K. Rowling turned out to be a TERF. Like, she really was like preaching this ordained from birth bullshit throughout.
Yeah, I mean, the sorting hat thing, like, I never found it like fun. Like, before I had like an adult like political vocabulary to describe it, I never found joy in being like, ooh, I'm a Hufflepuff or I'm a Gryffindor or whatever. It's just like, oh, this seems like, I don't know, it seems like a little shitty that like you just took all the like characters who you think are a little doofy and made them like Hufflepuffs or whatever. It's like,
yeah. And then by like book four, there she's like, we'll throw you a bone. One of them's hot. But
yeah,
now he's dead. Let's kill him off. I think that because I was a big Harry Potter fan back through my own high school years, that the major appeal there lies in the same factor as actually a lot of like British youth fiction, that the fantasy of being at a boarding school with all of your friends and unsupervised in a way that you definitely wouldn't be in real life is kind of that's what it is. You live in a big castle with your buddies and you have all your own shit going on that the adults don't know and don't care about. I think therein lies the primary appeal to that franchise.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess, like, you wouldn't think that it would translate as well over to American culture, but maybe, like, grade school kids glommed on to, like, different aspects of it, or just, like, the what if I had magical powers part of it and didn't really examine the whole, like, class structure implications of there exactly. being a hat that decides your class forever. Yeah.
Like, that seems copable with, like, while you're sitting there, you know, doing your active shooter drill, you know, you're like, well, this would be cool if I was hanging out in the squashy chairs in the Hufflepuff dormitory.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also, I'm sure, like an Anglophilia like aspect here. Is that Anglophone? Anglophilia would be like if you're like into British stuff in like a sexual way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Anglophone is if you just like the culture. Yeah.
There was always, did you guys have a kid in your high school class who affected a British accent for no reason whatsoever and tried to act like it was natural? I feel like that's a thing in every high school.
I have known adults who have like studied abroad there and kind of like come back like lightly accented in a way that feels, yeah, a little affected, but I never encountered anyone in school like that.
I knew two of them. Maybe they both got assigned to my high school instead of yours.
Yes. They're like, we can only annoy so many kids. We've got to distribute the load, the burden. Yeah, but like Sky High is so smart about like breaking down that hierarchy. And then I feel like we just dove straight into like, what if social hierarchies were good, actually?
Yeah.
Well, Sky High, unfortunately, I think came in too late because Harry Potter would have already been on like its third movie by then. So it actually, from that lens, it's interesting that Sky High chose to approach it differently.
I always, sorry that I'm derailing into Harry Potter land, but I haven't had the chance to process these thoughts out loud with anyone yet. But I always felt like, is it just like, fuck the muggles? Like, why do they care about saving the world if they don't even seem to care about like 99.9% of the people who live on it?
They're only interested in avoiding fascist rule for themselves. They don't give a fuck about the muggles, I think, is kind of the... They only do enough to, like, ensure their own self-interest with the muggles.
Yeah. Do you think it was just, like, convenient plot decision that if, like, you had to bring the whole world into the equation that, like, it would be impossible to write? Or do you feel like that's just reflective of the like classism inherent in the like premise of some people are specially chosen to have powers and the rest are just like doofuses.
My vote would be for the latter, seeing as how the author's personal views have unspooled publicly since.
But also like there are just elements of Harry Potter that you can just like already see, like, yeah, this was deeply like anti-Semitic. Weird, like, I don't know. It was just weird the whole way down. My dad read the series to me, like, when I was little, but I really don't consider myself to have read the books, and I've only seen the movies once. That's my extent of the Harry Potter knowledge.
I was the same age as Harry Potter. Like, I guess I discovered it when the third book came out, and I was 13 at the time, and so then the books pretty much released like in time with me to be 14 when he was 14 in the book, 50, you know, on through until it finished.
That was really like the key.
Yeah. And then it's a little weird to grow up like sort of that having been part and parcel of your development and be like, wow, it is so blatantly obvious like how bigoted so much of this shit was from the start. Just like everything about growing up, I guess. There was a little muggle influence there in Sky High with Ron Wilson, bus driver, who has no powers of his own, but instead of moving off to make a life for himself, like in the non-hero world, is really committed to being the bus driver to the point that he's willing to put up with bullying from some of the asshole, air quote, hero students.
Yeah, and we see Will having to protect civilians from collateral damage in this like little superhero civil war, and then at the opening we show Kurt Russell like killing a big robot that is like threatening the human city. And now the more that I'm thinking about it, like Sky High shows a template for how you like, I don't know, how you do that, how you show the intermeshedness of these people with their like surroundings, like have the Harry Potter wizards save, I don't know, big Voldemort from blowing up Big Ben or some shit like that. I don't know.
Like, yeah, like show like an integration into the real world. Because it's like, at the end of the day, why the fuck should I matter? What should I care? Like, obviously they don't care about me, and it doesn't even seem like he really cares about getting up over into the muggle side of things. So,
you know, that I think that you maybe kind of explained it there, Sadie, that Ron Wilson, bus driver, that like, maybe that's just too much like psychological terror to go out and live powerless in the real world, knowing that you could be destroyed by the forces of evil at any time. But when you know that the superhero world is there and you yourself can have access to it, well, even like, in limited form.
The regular world knows that superheroes exist.
Yeah. I love the threads on Twitter about like life as a regular citizen in Gotham City. Where like, Batman finds out you're behind on your student loans and like beats the shit out of you.
It was like, would you move to Gotham if the rent was really good?
Yes. And they were saying that, of course, like, yeah, because like you also need to pick like on your level, because like you don't want to live in Metropolis, because there you're going to get wrecked all the time by enemies who are coming for Superman and like his level of power. So at least in Gotham, you've just got to deal with the Penguin and shit.
Yeah. Don't go to Bloodhaven. I mean, speaking of those thought experiments, though, this is why I kind of liked, for all its flaws, Zack Snyder's Batman versus Superman, because it opens showing like regular people getting like skyscraper debris dropped on them from like Superman's fight with what's his face? Zod? General? Was Zod?
That's Zod. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, yes, we're like acknowledging that these people exist in context. And the Marvel movies are like terrible at like establishing that.
They make it, even when they try to do that, they make it so colorful and the victory so cheerful that it basically is like just a big fuck you to the civilians who just got crushed in that building or whatever. I guess you have a point about that with the grim dark of Batman versus Superman before they're like crying together about Martha's, you know, it at least is appropriately gray for the fallen normal people.
Yeah, in Marvel movies, they'll be like, fortunately, the downtown core is empty today because of a fire drill. So nobody is there right now as these superheroes fight.
And then when they do, it's so like weirdly military. I can't describe it, but it's just like, I'm thinking about Iron Man 3. So like in between, oh God, the mental gymnastics I'm trying to do right now. I think it was after Avengers Age of Ultron, when the one country that's supposed to be like Estonia and Serbia, but isn't, what is it? Sokovia? So whatever it is.
That sounds right.
They decimate that entire fucking country. And then in Iron Man 3, like a woman comes up to Iron Man and she's like, my son was in Sokovia and you killed him. Fuck you. And then he like, or maybe it's several. You know what? I'm not going to pretend that I know what I'm talking about. But that scene happens at some point in a movie. And like, and then it just kind of, I think that that's actually the entire plot of Captain America Civil War. But then like nothing happens. It's literally just like these stupid fucking non-superpowered people don't know what they're talking about because they're too stupid and their little pea brains can't comprehend that their lives don't matter, but it's all about the greater good. So shut the fuck up, mom who lost her son. But yeah. I don't know.
I just want to note on air really quickly how angry I am that the one hero, like in their whole lineup, who actually has coped with what they did with Scarlet Witch, where she's the only one who, she starts out as a villain. When she joins the side of the hero, she does blow up a building and kill people or whatever and has to like cope with that. There's the whole stuff, like WandaVision was my favorite thing that Marvel ever did. And then they just like wipe out all of that character development just to be like, bitches be crazy in the new Doctor Strange.
It's fun. It's really great.
But Sky High, let's get back to talking about which teenagers should make out.
War and Peace?
War and Peace should make out with everyone.
Jacob Blight is
including,
like,
I will travel back in time to be 17 years old so that I can smooch War and Peace.
Oh my God, my obsession with War and Peace and Zuko from Avatar The Last Airbender, two sides of the same piece of shit. I'll tell you.
Was Raphael your favorite Ninja Turtle too?
Gonna be honest, I'm not as well versed in the Ninja Turtles lore. Is he not a turtle?
No, they're all turtles. Yeah, for
they're
sure.
They're genetically enhanced turtles. Rufio from Hook walked so that War and Peace could run, is what I'll say.
Hell yes, he did. Rufio.
I think I will support a War and Peace pairing by default, in that I think Will is very boring as a romantic option.
I'm going to say thruple once again. I have to say it. I feel like it would work so well.
Okay. I'm going to disagree with both of you because I think that Layla needs to get over this boring crush that she has on Will Stronghold in the first place. She needs to get with the guinea pig girl. Guinea pig girl is the cutest person in this movie. I don't remember what her character's name is because, I just did as soon as I said it. Magenta. She has the same stylings as War and Peace, but like on a cute little chick with like more of a purple tint rather than a red. And I think that maybe when Layla and Magenta go to superhero college and like get stuck rooming together, maybe something could blossom there.
Interesting. Yeah, I could see that. I could absolutely see that. I feel like Will tries to do good, and I think that he's not a bad character, right? But like, I don't know. I'm going to reference something that neither of you know about, but there's also a thruple of a very similar energy in the the reboot Gossip Girl. And they're canonically a throuple.
I think I've heard of this.
Yes. And I feel like they have similar energy, right? Where they like, there's like one spicy character in the mix, and it just kind of makes the less interesting characters more interesting by default. I'm a big fan of that throuple. I hope that they actually carry it on.
Are they going to keep going with Gossip Girl 2.0?
No, they have to. I need
I
to know.
I think that will probably fall victim to the media endlessly merging itself into one company. I'm afraid.
But that's not happening for like over another year. I still have time.
So I've got to finish watching FBoy Island. I've got to watch Minx. And I have to watch the entirety of New Gossip Girl before HBO removes this shit. Probably like next week. Damn.
You have... Jen, if you watch New Gossip Girl, we need to do a bonus episode on it. Because I need to work out some
shit. I watched like half of OG Gossip Girl. So this will be interesting to jump into the... jump on into the new era.
I got to the part where one of the main characters tries to like date rape a girl, but it's like shown as like not that, and I was like, no thank you. And I think
that
it was like
keeping
episode
with
two.
The Gossip Girl spirit. I think literally in like the first episode of the old one, Chuck Bass tries to rape Jenny at a party, and then
no,
they
that's
just
what
like
I'm saying.
Oh yeah, yeah,
that's when I
oh
that's
I
when
you're
I
saying they
out.
Did that in the, yeah, that was what things
no,
were
they
like
not-
in 2005. This was the media landscape that Sky High wholesomely entered into.
Yeah. Sky High. I feel like War and Peace is such an interesting character, and they did not do enough with him. Like the scene where Layla is at the Chinese restaurant and she's waiting for Will, and Will has completely forgotten about her, and Warren is working there, and he sits down and they have a little heart to heart. Like that was great. I wanted more of that. And at the end where Will is like, my girlfriend became my enemy. My enemy became my best friend, and my best friend became my girlfriend. Wow, life is crazy. I'm like, no, your enemy should have became your boyfriend. Your best friend should have became your girlfriend. And that's that.
Didn't they give War and Peace some girlfriend right at the end?
Yes.
They're like, oh,
and I want to discuss
he's with
that,
Ice
actually.
Girl now.
Yeah, because so War and Peace, obviously when I watched this in 2005, I was like, what is wrong with this Layla chick? She should have gone for War and Peace 1,000 times over. Fuck Will, whatever. And then watching it this time, I'm so disappointed that they didn't make sequels or tie-in movies to this. Because now, after seeing, like, while Will is saying that line at the end about, you know, his enemy becoming his best friend, they show War and Peace, Ice Girl from the... who is only shown at the entrance, like to the, when they're first coming up to the high school and they're like sort of goggling over the powers and stuff. It shows some dude like laser eyes lech on a girl who's walking by, and she turns around and freezes both him and his buddy there. And then there's like another sight gag there that they're still frozen there like weeks later. So with just that entrance and then seeing Fire Guy, War and Peace, and Ice Girl like get together at the end, then like putting together War and Peace's arc in the movie, I think that Ice Girl and War and Peace were already pre-existingly together and like just going through a rough patch at this period. Because when we meet War and Peace, this doesn't seem like his character later in the movie to get into like a literally flame-throwing fight with some chumpy little freshman kid who happened to trip near him or whatever, you know? And this is the same day that Ice Girl is freezing those creeps out front. So I think that they had a fight, they broke up. Then we keep seeing War and Peace like at his job at the restaurant, and he's just like sort of the wise elder giving like good relationship advice to the kids. And he also canonically states like he is very much not interested in Layla romantically, which kind of puts a little roadblock in the possibility of them hooking up there. He like makes sure that she wants to go to the dance with him just to piss off Will, not because she's actually interested in him. So I want the movie of what the fuck was going on with War and Peace and Ice Girl throughout that till they ended up together. I think it would be fun to have just opened the Sky High
hot
universe
and cold
with
relationship.
Yeah, with
will.
Like you know, just start us out with Will Stronghold's narrative and then go through and focus on some of these other characters could have been fun.
I feel like pair him with someone who also has fire powers. I feel like pairing War and Peace with an ice girl, that's heteronormativity right there. That's like, that's true. You should like neutralize each other to form a basic partnership instead of like, no, like you should be double fire.
Or, yeah. The like, it would have been kind of, I do worry about the implications of if the fire guy had hooked up with the plant girl, though. That seems like a bad pairing. Plant girl.
It gives me shades of X-Men with the like girl who can't touch things and she's has to wear gloves.
Oh,
and
Rogue. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, which like, yeah, no, that's a metaphor for like repressed, like the repression of female sexual desire, right?
Well, like, I mean, X-Men is like all about being queer, like on all levels, undeniably. I guess there's a little bit of hetero lady stuff in there, but not much.
On the Wikipedia page for Sky High, it says director Mike Mitchell said that Sky High functions on two basic premises. The adults are all insane and the girls are smarter than the boys. The film also employs extensive use of Dutch angles.
What's a Dutch angle?
It's just like a kind of a pretentious,
you tilt like, the camera
film technique.
Yeah. Horror movies and suspense movies use it a lot. Like you don't start out with Dutch angles, but as things get more intense and Jason Bourne is running down an alley. Well, the Bourne movies don't do this because they're too shaky, but like noir famously used it a lot of like, oh, we're going to show Humphrey Bogart walking down this dimly lit street, but like tilted 15 degrees to the right. So, you know, things are getting fucked up now. Yeah.
It's also very funny because it says for the treatment of the teenage actors, Mitchell also stated that that all the actors had their own trailer and were generally kept separated because we did not want them to date after the second week and break up after the fourth, which would have made filming difficult.
Oh my God. Just have to herd these child actors.
They're like, we don't want anyone to fall in love on set.
Probably, honestly, very practical, especially for like, you know, that age group. Because like, where else
they should still do this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Spare us all the Zendaya, Tom Holland headlines. Just like, never allow these people to meet outside of the set.
Zendaya and Tom Holland had a slow burn.
That's why these people are
though.
All successful now. Because they were kept separated.
I mean, and then there was Robston. Sorry, you guys are not obviously recognizing the Twilight couple name of Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart, who apparently still have a dedicated following.
That blows my mind.
That they are secretly married. Yes, and have two children. There are still Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson shippers who still think that Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson are together and secretly married and have like two children, and that their entire actual real lives are just a cover to keep that secret from the public. Lainey Gossett brings it up sometimes because every time she reports on Kristen Stewart or Robert Pattinson, especially if she reports on either of them being with another person, you know, as they are, she will get some hate mail from these people.
Oh my God.
These are the same people who think Chrishell and Jason is like a love story written in the stars for all time. I don't think there's any actual overlap, but it feels like it comes from the same impulse of like, yeah.
Do you feel like G-Flip is going to be in Selling Sunset season 5 or whatever season we're on?
G-Flip has said in interviews that they don't really want to be featured in the show and that they just like to play drums and just want to keep playing drums and not be bothered, which
is very fair.
We love that. We love that for them.
I just watched a clip of G Flip playing Gay For Me at like a festival on Instagram last night. And you know, G Flip's like the leather pants with the trucker cap style is not typically very attractive to me. But when you see G Flip in motion, it just works. Like, damn.
Yeah. I would say of my experience interviewing G energy flip was surprising. Not that, like, I didn't know that they would be, like, incredibly, like, kind and charismatic, but, like, it sort of still bowled me over in this way of, like, oh, I see, like, what Chriselle, like, sees in you.
Tell me more.
Just, like, G-Flip is just pretty unbothered by the world, you know? Like, I asked them, like, how they were dealing with, like, the social media scrutiny on their relationship and all the, like, you know, comments and that kind of thing. And they were just like, well, I grew up in Melbourne and I just wanted to play drums. And now I get to do that and go to the beach every day. So it's hard to be bothered because I'm living my dream life. You know, this apologies
they
to
like
G-Flip.
And I love that.
For my impersonation. But yeah, like they just seem like totally placid, but then also like super like vulnerable and exciting and like emotional in a way that would appeal to Chriselle. Cause I think Chriselle wants that like that tempestuousness probably, but like without the like, I don't know, neuroticness that like the Oppenheimer like brothers clearly have. Yeah. Also, G Flip called me mate in their Australian accent, and that was, you know,
oh,
the peak
God.
Of my
Clutched
journalistic
my chest
career.
When
yeah.
you said that. Oh,
just
Samantha.
Like, thanks, mate.
How are you gonna top that?
I was like, I'm done. No more celebrity interviews for me. This is the high.
Well,
the sky.
Sky high.
This is the sky high. I will give Sky High 4 out of 5 flying school buses. It's pretty good.
I will give Sky High 4 de-aged superhero babies out of 5. Because like there, it was still like it's like a movie from my childhood from 2005, and it still made me laugh in quite a few parts, especially the conversations between Coach Boom and the Mega Mind looking fellow. They were just very funny, and also I love the message. I think that it's a great movie for kids and young adults and people finding themselves. And I don't know. I thought that the acting was good. Sue me. I liked it. And also, it's a much more nuanced conversation about superheroes than anything Marvel has ever done.
It is, which, like, damn, that's a burn on you, Marvel. No, Sadie, I agree. Sky High, amazing. The acting is magnificent. The adult actors in it are having such a fucking good time. I don't know. I laughed a lot watching it as an adult. Would recommend it if, you know, you want to have a good time. And for that reason, I will give Sky High 4.5 glowing Cousin Gregs out of 5. I'm dinging the half off just because of some of the 2005-ness of it, you know, that in 2022, we see ways where things could have been improved, but it's a pretty great movie. And it's before movies ran longer than 2 hours, so it's like not an overwhelming sit. Do recommend. Like Sky High. Ugh, War and Peace should have had his own spinoff show.
Jen, what question should I ask you right now?
Oh, well, you should ask me because I thought of one more thing to say. What type of adorable forest enclosure the plant girl, Layla, should have made for her guinea pig shifter girlfriend, Magenta, to hang out with when she's in guinea pig form? Because that's just such a wonderful, like, would you still love me if I was a worm scenario? And yes, I do believe that Layla would love Magenta when she was a guinea pig. Not like literally, like I don't think they would, like, she could stroke her on her little guinea pig head. Not in the physical sense of the term there.
Oh, goodness.
And now that's a perfect lead in to tell you where to find us online. At Twitter, we are at YSSTOG. We have an email address that we don't check very often, but when we do, we get super excited to see that we have an email. That's YSSTOGpodcast@gmail.com. And if you would like to continue funding our streaming of all of these fine films that we discuss for you, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/YSSTOG. And we've got some cool tiers of rewards on there. If you do like $3 a month, you can get on our Discord server and talk to us more about Sky High. And then in increasing tiers, like Sadie makes playlists for you and you can pick movies for us to watch and cool stuff like that. And I will try to remember to check the Discord this week because I have neglected it for a while and I feel like I need to come in there and leave you all some gifs.
I would like to thank our lovely, wonderful superhero Patreons, Logan Mayonnaise, Andrew, Althea, Xenolon, Sharon, Justin, Evan, Liz, Brittany, Ace, Mara, Raimi the Void, Heartleaf, Abe with Teeth, Hadas, Ryan, Maddie, Abby, Brian, Caroline, and Brianna. We love you all so very much. Thank you for being here and for saving us and for not being supervillains.
Yeah, you are all heroes to us, not sidekicks.
I feel like that's such a corny way to end the podcast. I'm gonna do it anyway.